Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 58.
Gozo hot tea. That's Japanese.
Hey, everybody. Happy mid-February.
Happy Wednesday. Happy hump day.
Making it through that winter once again. I hope you're all doing great.
Unless you're listening from the other side of the world, and then you're in your summer.
Yeah, from the southern hemisphere, as it were. In any case, the Cirque de Demain Paris Circus Festival was a couple weeks ago, and they live stream one of the shows on the internet on the French channel Art, or Arte, A-R-T-E. What'd you think? We only were able to see show B. There's a show A, a show B, and a gala show, but all of show B was online.
Well, I also watched Circus Talks live or Instagram stories, so I could see kind of a day. But I thought it was good. I really loved Barcode. They were clearly, you know, very rehearsed, and the three of them have. It was Russian Bar. Barcode consists of Tristan Nielsen, Alex Royer, I don't know, and Eric Bates. And, you know, they work together on Sequence 8. We saw them do Russian Bar together there.
We also saw them at Midnight Circus do
Russian Bar. Oh, yeah, and Midnight Circus. So I think, you know, like, they're clearly, like, very seasoned performers, and you could tell how good they are, basically. I also really loved the trapeze, the duo trapeze. And I also like Leah Hinz's act with the two B-boys.
Yeah, Leah Hinz did Aerial Hoop. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I gotta say that Barcode Russian Bar Act, to me, is like, it should be taught at circus schools on how you craft a circus act. You know, it has a bit of a Seven Fingers flair to it, because that whole team has been working with Seven Fingers for so long. Mm-hmm. But the combination of the song, having good lyrics, having good costumes, that all made sense, the motivations made sense. And, you know, I don't know if it's on purpose or not, but, like, the final trick she does, I think it's a half in, half out, and lands back on the bar and then jumps one more time and lands on her stomach in the end on the bar. But it seems that they barely caught her on the live stream, and it looked super cool. It's sort of like one of those things that's so close to being a mistake that it actually looks like way cooler than, you know, maybe was planned.
Yeah, it was a really great number, like, all in all. I totally agree. I think that was something that the duo trap was missing. And, like, a lot of the acts were missing, actually, was this, like,
what the hell's going on?
Yeah, like, what's going on, and the, like, slight playfulness in it?
Yeah, you know, that was they had a positive energy to it. So many dark, moody numbers.
And it's okay if it's a little moody, if, like, the song fits that mood and there's a real motivation behind why you're being so moody. But, you know, if it's just, like, I'm going to be moody and pick this music and wear this costume. And, you know, it's harder to... It's like ice skating. We're watching the Olympics right now, which is so fun to watch. I love Olympic coverage. Love watching curling. Love watching luge.
I like the downhill skiing. That's my jam.
The snowboarding. But I ultimately love the figure skating. But, you know, it's also interesting when you see a figure skater that's technically amazing, but then has, like, no face. Like,
nope,
the whole
deadpan.
Body is, like, into it, and then face is just dead. And then there was this, what, Russian girl who was, like, 15 and had both of that. Like, her face
she was
in it.
Excuse me, not a Russian girl. She was an Olympic athlete from Russia.
Excuse me. An Olympic athlete from Russia. And she had the face and like, the technical, and she just, you know, blew everyone else out of the water. And I think, like, that's what Barcode had to me, like... They had the technical skill and also
the performance.
The performance, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. Jumping back to the Olympics for a second, I wonder if doping is a thing in circus. You know, I've never seen it be a thing, but, you know, jumping, you know, back to that sort of why they're calling it the Olympic athletes from Russia, it's because of all the doping scandal from the Sochi Olympics. But that must be, you know, it's not something in my experience, but that must be something that surely some circus performers do. I doubt they get tested for, like, demand or these other kinds of festivals, because it's not really like who can run the fastest,
right,
or, you know, who can lose the fastest. But, you know, you do some substance enhancers, you know, you can imagine how that might make you stronger or more agile. I don't recommend it to any circus performers. You know, it messes with your brain. It's good to keep you at a good yep. level, good for artistic reasons, good for working with people reasons. But
yeah, I don't know.
You know, I'm sure at some point there'll be an article about it somewhere.
Hopefully not.
I mean, hopefully not. But, you know, it's like anything else. You imagine that some people somewhere are doing it.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that some people somewhere are doing that were in the news this week, Sleep No More got its own Me Too story. It was super long in BuzzFeed. And this is a Me Too story that is not like any others that we have seen, really. And basically the premise of it is that Sleep No More, if you don't know, is a immersive, basically dance show that's based off of Macbeth. It takes place in a multi-level building. It's supposed to look like a hotel in the Chelsea district in Manhattan. And all the audience goes in wearing masks. So everybody is anonymous, and you run around the whole building trying to catch the parts of the show you can see. And lots of things are happening simultaneously. But before the show starts, there's an announcement that basically says,
fortune favors the bold.
So it's just encouraging you to be bold, essentially. But what that has manifested as is audience members regularly groping and being sexually inappropriate with cast members. And apparently pretty pervasively. Like, BuzzFeed interviewed, like, 30 people who worked at Sleep No More over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I think there were only really, like, 8 serious incidences. But I think more people, like, experienced it.
And apparently some of them were brought up to management and some weren't. The management team's this company called Immersive, who also worked at The Box and also have sort of different similar kinds of hybrid nightclub show events in New York City and elsewhere. And it's evident that they have some level of processes in place. People go through training, you know where the security guards are, there's stuff you're supposed to do in all these versions. But they also weren't saying don't touch the performers.
Right.
So it's a good example of, like, is management really doing everything they could be doing? It's not exactly management's fault, but they clearly aren't being as proactive as maybe they could have been. Now, as I understand it, they have some kind of announcement that says, please don't touch the performers.
I think it's also, I mean, it's kind of this whole genre of, like, whatever immersive theater is defined by now. But I think one added element of Sleep No More that other shows don't have is the mask. Because when you're wearing, so everyone who sees Sleep No More as a guest gets a white mask that completely covers your face. Like, you can't see anything except your eyes, and it's very hard to know who anyone is. And even if you go with your friends, you have to look at their shoes to figure out if it's them. Being anonymous also takes away a bit of the, like, I shouldn't do that.
Sort of like being anonymous on the internet almost, right? People say more mean things to one another when...
I think you're more aggressive when you have no culpability for, like, because no one knows who you are.
But I guess, you know, another element of this story is that some of the people who were these, like, super fans who would go over and over and over and over again, you know, the producers and management wanted these people to keep coming back and be treated as special VIPs.
Yeah, that's like, you know...
But some of them were the creepiest, apparently. Money. Apparently, the performers were complaining about one of these super fans who was just getting all up in their business and being super creepy and maybe inappropriate. And it's sort of this conflict of interest, right? Because the performers are like, don't let this guy come to the show. But this dude is paying like $100 multiple times a week for multiple weeks. So it's, you know, it's one of these stories that's just interesting. You know, I worked at The Box for a while as a performer. And, you know, like, I'd get off stage and people would slap my butt. But, like, nothing particularly that I thought was terrible. And it sort of just came with the understanding, like, I'm going to work in a place that's all about
sexuality
and people are going to be drunk and people are going to be on drugs, and it's just going to be a thing that happens, and it's not that terrible or that awful. But again, like, I'm a guy, you know, I was a guy in my 20s. I never really was put in a situation where I was, like, feeling like I was forced to do anything. But it's an odd concept to think that, like, your, in air quotes, workplace is full of customers who are going to be sexually inappropriate with you, and sort of what does that mean? Like, that's really nobody's fault other than the audience's fault. Obviously, like I said, management can always do better to try to prevent these things.
Well, I think that it's weird because when you see that show, there's nudity. It is like intimate. Like, they whisper things in your ear, and I think if you're not instructed, if you don't know the rules, you don't know you're breaking them. You know, and some people obviously are just creepers and took it way too far. But I think it's also like you don't know. I did not like Sleep No More. I had a hard time being there because it was so, I felt like there were no rules, and which made me feel uncomfortable in a way because I want to know, like, where I should go. Like, I missed everything because I also, the crowds, people are crazy for one-on-ones. They want to have these one-on-one experiences with the performers, and they crowd you and they run and they cut you off. to be in front so they can get picked. And like for me, it was just not, I was like so not into it, and I would go the other way.
I think the core issue at the base of, you know, something like Sleep No More, mm-hmm. something like The Box, is that you are selling get drunk, be anonymous,
yeah.
there are no rules, and that is the appeal. It's yes. more the appeal than the show is. Mm-hmm. It's more the appeal than anything else is. Maybe that it's exclusive and all the cool kids are doing it is an element. But maybe essentially what you're selling is this like free-for-all thing you could never get anywhere else.
Right.
So the idea that the company would try to like make more rules and protect the performers more, which is what they should do, is yeah. sort of antithetical to...
Right. But you could say it in such a fun way. Like, you know, like, you can look, but do not touch. Or that's, like, the lamest version of it.
Yeah.
But also, like, the problem with Sleep No More is there's no talking. So it's not, like, within the performance, the character... I mean, I guess there is a little bit. But, you know, like, I was just thinking when you said there are no rules. You know, Misbehave, game show, our show that we're producing in Las Vegas with Amy Saunders and Brett Pfister... You know, that whole show is like break the rules, you know, like the rules are there are no rules and you get rewarded for points. But you have an amazing crafter of the audience who is Amy, who can control them, you know, and if someone does get too rowdy, like she can figure out a way to put them back. And a lot of these performers are just like, you know, young dancers and aren't ready. I don't. And even at The Box, I think those like variety performers are used to this. Right. This like this line that like gets crossed a little bit, and I think are more used to like trying to keep it at bay. But the performers at Sleep No More are dancers and actors, you know, who are used to these really strict rules, like fourth wall,
and want to please the audience
and you know, I think it's like it's a really interesting case study because it's such a strange show that you know, what the right answer is probably say something like do not touch.
Yeah, we'll see if anything else comes out of that that story. Yeah. So before we hop into the podcast, we want to tell you about our virtual reality experience we've been talking about all year. Has taken us a whole year to complete. We kickstarted it back in November and December of 2016.
Yes.
Spent all of 2017 traveling the country, finding some of the best acts, shooting them in the most beautiful locations with our 360 camera, then putting that into the computer, making it look beautiful, adding some virtual reality immersive elements to it. And I finally have a rough cut. So if you are one of our Kickstarter backers and you backed us with more than $100, you should have gotten an email this morning with a link to the rough cut version.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be putting out the final version either later this week or first thing next week, so keep your eyes peeled for it. We're going to upload it to YouTube and Facebook, so if you don't have a virtual reality headset, you can watch it, but we designed it for being viewed in a virtual reality headset. So if you've got a Google Cardboard, Google Daydream, Oculus Rift, Samsung Gear, or HTC Vive, we strongly recommend you use it. It really changes the immersive element of the experience. When you watch it on a computer, you gotta like drag your cursor so that you can like see everything that's happening. And we really took into account where we think your head will be and how your head will move. And if you're doing it with a cursor or a mouse, just won't really have the same kind of impact. But keep your eye out for it. I think you guys are gonna like it. If you haven't been able to see one of our live shows before because you don't live in New York or Australia or Las Vegas, this is a great way to get a little introduction to our flavor.
On this week's podcast, we have the amazing hand-tapping, Irish step-dancing, show-creating duo Suzanne and Peter from Up and Over It, and Peter's partner, Johnny, who is their producer and also an artist in his own right. Peter and Suzanne started as competitive Irish step dancers, which led them to Riverdance. And I don't know about you, but I was obsessed with Riverdance. Never could do it, but was very obsessed with it. After doing a few other Irish step dancing shows, which you'll hear about, they transitioned into doing variety through hand tapping with their hands. And you'll hear the whole story about how that evolved and came to be and how Johnny got involved. And I had the best time listening to all their stories. They were also in La Soiree and Rose Rabbit Live, Vegas Nocturne. They're in a show currently here in New York called Riot at NYU Skirball. And I already said this, but I just had the absolute most best time interviewing them.
Yeah, I think you'll be able to tell just in the recording how much fun we're all having together.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in this episode for people who are regular listeners. I think often some of the stories after a little while can sound the same, but this is really a unique story with a unique perspective, and there's just some real gems.
Yes, gems. And just like really nice people. And I think something to take away from this episode is how self-starting they all are. You know, Johnny videoed them in their kitchen. They were like, let's just create something. Like, let's take something to the fringe. We don't know what it is, but let's just do it. And they did it. And I think like that's a really
admirable
and something you want to emulate, you know, just like the idea of just like doing it, just do it. And I think this is a really great podcast.
Before we let you listen to the episode, if you're a fan of the podcast, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter tweet us, write us an email at hello@hideawaycircus.com, and please, please, please rate us on iTunes, subscribe to us on iTunes. That's the number one way new listeners find our show.
Here is our episode with Johnny, Peter, and Suzanne from Up and Over It. Enjoy.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for coming. So there are two of you, so we'll start with you, Suzanne. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Cork.
Where's Cork?
Ireland.
What's Cork like?
It's cold, damp, lovely people. What's it like?
Is it a little town or like a medium-sized? It's not a big city, right? It's maybe a smaller city?
It's the second biggest city in Ireland, I think. But I'm actually from an island off, like, in the harbour. And it's like a naval base / steelworks. But then the steelworks isn't there anymore. It's like, yeah,
so do you take
just a naval base.
So it's like a legit island with a bridge? Or do you have to take
a boat.
Oh my gosh, you have to take a boat?
Yeah.
So like going grocery shopping, do you have to like take a ferry into town to go grocery?
Yeah.
Wow, that's commitment.
So we moved off the island though when I was like 19. Yeah. Something like that.
Like Amazon priming, groceries.
Well, there was like a primary school.
Yeah.
But they took us out of that because there was like 12 students in the whole school.
But were you able to learn to... So you ended up doing dancing, is my guess, is the first thing. Were you able to dance on the island, or did you also have to commute for that?
To commute for the classes. But then there was also like a drill shed for the Navy, you know, for marching.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd be down one side like with my... little ghetto blaster doing my Irish dancing and the boys then marching around.
What did you see that made you want to learn Irish step dancing?
My mom. She did Irish dancing, so we were all involved.
Did you take other
types
of dance?
I was the only one that stuck.
Huh? Did you take other types of dance?
No.
Just Irish?
Just Irish. Yeah.
Wow.
You said other ones, so you have siblings?
Yes.
Are you one of how many?
Five.
Five? Whoa,
yeah.
Where do you fall in that?
Irish family.
Yeah.
Last... The baby.
Last.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm the baby.
But also the most ignored, maybe?
Like.
Or they were like, just go do some dancing. Get out of the house.
Well, my mom was determined that she was like, right, this one is going to do well. Because all the others, like, they used to go dancing in the summer and then give it up in the winter because it was too cold and getting the boat and everything was crap. So, yeah, she made me stick to it.
Well, and you stuck to it, you have.
I did. Yeah, I liked it.
Peter, where are you from?
I'm from Cardiff in Wales.
What's Cardiff like?
Cardiff is, well, I thought it was a big city when I was a kid, but it is a big city. It has like a nice old castle in the middle of the city. It's the capital city of Wales. It's quite buzzy, it's nice.
And does that have an Irish step dancing scene in Wales?
Surprisingly, yes, yeah. My grandfather was Irish, so he sent me along to do it. And I really didn't want to go. I thought it was going to be like old ladies, you know, jumping around and all that. So I wasn't interested. But I went there and I loved it. Like, it was great. Yeah, really athletic and met other boys and went to competitions and got medals. And that was, you know, for a 9-year-old, that was amazing. Yeah.
Oh, so there's a whole competitive scene
for
it.
Yeah.
What is that like? How does that work?
Oh, it's like...
It's grown now since Riverdance. So before Riverdance, it was just competitive, you know, side to it.
And it was just kind of Irish communities in like America, Australia.
Yes. Yeah, only Irish people did it.
But
only
now
Catholic
it's
Irish
like, they, oh my God, there's Hungarians going to the World Championships and, you know, people from...
Isn't that
the Ukraine? Yeah, it's crazy.
And these are like teenagers who are doing it? Like,
adults,
is it sport, basically?
We have age groups. So we have, anything from under 7 all the way up to senior people. So you get, you know, I went back to competition. at like 27 to do the World Championships. So nice. I mean, you can carry on doing it. Wow. You know, people carry on. I think the oldest person to compete at the Worlds was 30.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but 30. yeah, all ages.
Irish step dancing seems like I have to, when you have to do like steps in a class, you're like, oh my God, I'm dying. And Irish step dancing is literally all just like beepity.
Yeah, would you guys would you guys describe what it looks like in the style of it to somebody who maybe hasn't seen Irish dancing before?
I like to think of it as like tap dancing and ballet combined. Mm. So you have like that kind of technique of ballet, that very strict technique. Mm-hmm. So it's like long body, long legs.
And do you have to have your hands like right
there's a lot of
sides.
Rules.
Yeah,
with
hands
it,
by
your know,
side.
Hands by your side, yeah.
Keep your legs, feet crossed, feet turned out. And we only move on a plane in front and behind you, not to the side.
Yeah.
So no kind of splits that, you know.
Is that why it always looks like the knees are like locked?
Exactly. Yes.
Because it's just forward and back.
It's just forward and back. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't plie like ballet. So when you go up for a jump, you just land on your toes and carry on. So you don't get that kind of like rest.
Right.
Like down.
Okay.
It's soft enough, you know. It's like, boom,
we,
it's like
we don't
that.
Spot either.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
so you can't move your head. So when you're turning, it's like you don't spot, so you could end up anywhere. Yeah. You have to be very careful.
It feels so precise. Can you see like peripheral vision?
Yeah.
When you're doing it?
You just kind of hurt, you just like throw yourself at it, don't you? And like hope no one's in your way.
You have terrible peripheral vision.
I do, yeah.
I know he doesn't.
And did you study other dance?
He did.
Yes.
Forms.
I started with tap dancing and ballet. It was like, you know, in the UK, there was like ballet, tap and jazz. That was
right.
Like what everyone did as a kid.
Yeah.
And I just always wanted to be a tap dancer. When I loved Fred Astaire and
mm-hmm.
I was obsessed. So eventually my parents sent me. My dad didn't want me to go because he thought I'd turn out gay. Surprise.
Sorry, Dad.
so I did that first. And then because I did that kind of dancing, my grandfather was like, you should go to Irish dancing as well, with an Irish accent.
Yeah.
And then that's,
Was Irish tap dancing perceived as more manly than tap dancing?
Yes, definitely, despite the skirt we had to wear. definitely. I mean, I remember crying. I started off doing tap dancing and then they wanted me to do ballet in the school and I burst out crying thinking, I was like, my family will never like me doing ballet.
Oh my gosh.
Like, because I'm from a very working class, you know, masculine, you know,
right.
background. And so, it was like I was the only one in the family that had this kind of like streak in me that wanted just to dress in lycra and jump around
you
the stage.
You were like Billy Elliot.
That's totally Billy Elliot.
The angry dance is like my favorite part of that show.
You're
bopping around the stage.
So did you guys meet on Riverdance? Is that...
Well, I suppose we met in competition.
Yeah.
But we weren't...
We knew of each other.
Yeah, we weren't close. We weren't friends.
Did you guys have, like, reputations that you'd heard of one another?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we knew of
like
each other.
Like, good or bad reputations?
My story.
Yeah.
Peter was known as... Because in Irish dancing, we're poker-faced. Totally poker-faced, no smiles. But Peter, because of his jazz and tap background, had a big cheesy grin. So he was known as the guy that smiles. So we used to run into the hall to see the guy that smiles. He was the only one on the stage that would smile.
Was it like points deducted if you smiled?
No, people loved it.
No,
they all smile.
Smile
a lot now.
But we just looked miserable, like we hated life. You know, yeah. But Peter looked fabulous.
I was having a great time. We just knew of each other. Suzanne was a world champion. So, you know, everybody knew, Suzanne.
Mm-hmm. When you competed, do you compete alone or with a team?
No, alone.
So you,
on
your own.
There's also team.
Oh, okay.
Team.
But you won as a soloist?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What do you get judged on? I mean, I'm guessing it's like other dance competitions where it's like a combination of like how hard your technique is and artistry and... You know, maybe your costume as well or something. I don't know. What is the...
Yeah, the costumes.
Ooh. Like we said, we call it a carriage. So your upper body, making sure that the arms aren't flailing and you're not kind of, you know, going back and forth. How across your feet are, how up on your toes you are, you know, your extension, stamina, the steps that you're doing, how complicated they are.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have that kind of, you know, like in ice skating, I suppose, that like X factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
That somebody
yeah.
just, it all just comes together in this magical... way, well, they've trained hard to get to that point
right.
to make it look that easy. But I think that's what
Yeah.
That's where it is, yeah. Isn't it?
So you've reached this pinnacle of competitive Irish step dancing. How does that turn to doing it in a like performing venues to the outside world and, you know, more of your performing career? How does that turn happen?
Well, Riverdance magically happened. So it just wasn't on the cards for us to be in shows. And then the Eurovision, Riverdance happened at the Eurovision. And we were 14 when that happened. And it just like opened everything up.
Oh, so you guys have known each other since you were 14?
Yeah.
Wow.
Know of each other then, yeah.
Know of each other. Like, we really got to know each other in Riverdance.
Yeah.
When we were 17.
You started in Riverdance when you were 17?
Yeah.
I would, like, Riverdance was, I'm, like, playing it down, but I was obsessed with Riverdance. Like, for real. I saw it in Boston so many times. Every time. And then I think I saw it in New York. And I was like, oh my God, I want to do this. But because I could tap, but I could not. I was like, that's not for you. And my best friend at the time was a really good Irish dancer.
Well, there's lots. Boston is a huge Irish dancing
community. A massive Irish community.
Anyway,
Catholic Irish, especially in my town, too.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm a Jew. Irish step dancing.
There's
a funny story after post Riverdance where everyone just started Irish dancing, you know, not just Irish Catholics. One teacher that I know was teaching a class, and he said, okay, a young girl didn't know the difference between her right and her left leg. And he just said, so what hand do you bless yourself with? She's like, I'm Jewish.
No!
That's so funny.
So when you were 14, Riverdance started coming about, is what you said?
Yes.
Yeah.
Came from the Eurovision Song Contest. It was like an interval act.
Oh.
That blew up.
Yeah.
And you guys auditioned for it or were picked for it or?
Picked, which
picked.
Is nice.
Yeah. Nice, that's the way to do it. But that must have been like odd going from like the competitive mindset where you're building to like a competition versus like, all right, you're going to rehearse it for a couple of weeks and then like over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
The biggest change for us was to be from these small cities and towns,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden given all this money and travelling like to these massive cities, you know, like with no experience. Like my mother gave me £50 like to start this new life and a bag full of pots and pans because she didn't know how I was going to cook. Like we weren't from this background at all.
And my first contract was in Minneapolis. So during the winter.
Oh my God.
I didn't have a coat. So I got to Minneapolis and it was so cold.
Oh my God, people like don't go outside when it's in the winter. They go from their car to garage to work to garage.
I went there without a coat. It's just like a little, you know, flimsy denim jacket or something and no.
Did you get yourself a coat?
Oh yeah.
Like first paycheck.
No, I had to get in advance. I couldn't wait that long. I froze to death.
So it's a massive culture shock, you know, just, you know, being plucked from school, you know, to do that.
Right, at 17. So you guys, well, I don't know what you call it, but high school.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you guys were still in high school and you left high school to do this.
Yeah.
My principal teacher just said, go, you know, you can always come back to school whenever, you know. And I never did.
I was like,
you're a crazy lady. She was a nun, you know.
That's amazing. Wow. So your first stop was Minneapolis.
I was on a different tour,
yeah.
Oh, you were on two different tours.
Yeah, first of all. So I went to Edinburgh, first of all. So it wasn't too far away, but far enough, you know.
Yeah, and then maybe for the bones of a year.
Yeah.
And then we were put in the same show.
Mm.
And as soon as we went to that show, we were understudies for the leads. And when we met each other, we were like measuring each other. Yeah, we're the same height, you know, we can dance together.
Yeah. We just told
the dance captain, we're going to be dancing together. And he's like, okay.
Yeah. So you have to be the same height?
Well, it's a...
Well,
it's
slightly taller than me.
Yeah, slightly taller, but because I'm quite short, it's a problem matching me up with a partner.
Mm.
Right.
It is a very traditional boy girl show, do you know? So I couldn't be towering over me. I did wear higher heels, but
you did, I used to wear triple heels.
to be taller.
To be tall.
That's what Josh needs.
I did need platform.
Triple heels.
Cuban heel.
Pair of flares so nobody knows.
Who's a weirdo with the flares?
He's so tall.
So how long did you guys do Riverdance for?
I did it for 2 years, first of all, and then I left. because I had enough. And then went back to do the Broadway show when it opened here. But Suzanne carried on.
I did. How many? Five?
Oh, I did 3 years. Yeah, you did 4 years. I did three or five. I don't know. Yeah, something.
We finished in 2001 here in the Gershwin.
Nice.
So before
Wicked.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I worked at the Niederlanders, who owned the Gershwin, and part of my job was to go to all 9 of their houses and check for bed bugs.
Oh, nice.
And their HVAC system, so air conditioning, and it was
glamorous.
So fun, super glamorous. And make sure their bathrooms were soundproof.
What?
Because people were complaining in the dressing rooms behind, in the Gershwin.
Yeah.
Behind, they like back, the woman's dressing rooms back up to the woman's bathroom or those dressing rooms.
Right. Yeah.
And people in Wicked were complaining that you could hear the flushing during intermission.
Oh my
so
God.
I had to
throwing
go flush toilets for an hour while the architects figured out how to soundproof it.
That's amazing.
Because they did a whole reconstruction in there, didn't they?
They did. The whole top floor, the whole that bar area is all new, and then the bathrooms are all new and beautiful. But not soundproof, I guess.
Yeah.
So how long did you guys, how long did the Broadway version last, or how long were you
18
with
months.
Oh, that's
nice.
Pretty good for a Broadway run.
Yeah.
18 months. Like, it could have went longer, I
think. Totally could have, yeah.
Totally, but, you know, they just,
They were so used to making so much money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they started making a little less money, they just completely
freaked out.
Yeah. So, it was...
Like, when we got there first, it was pretty high up on the list, wasn't it? Like, next to Lion King?
Yeah. On the
and,
box office.
Yeah, it started to just...
Descend.
Yeah. And it's a big theatre.
It's a
huge.
Massive theatre.
Yeah.
Like we thought they might,
descend,
we might move somewhere.
Or to a smaller house.
Yeah.
That's what they normally do, right?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
In 2001, I think it was probably easier to get theatres. Now it's like insane.
Yeah.
But what else was on Broadway when you guys were doing Riverdale?
Well, Cats just finished.
And then
Mamma Mia. Yeah. Mamma Mia went straight in the same.
Oh, yeah, to the garden. Is
that
where it was?
Yeah,
the one just down the road. Yeah.
And we were
pretty bizarre, wasn't it, to pass the stage door and there's like a cat outside having a cigarette. That was pretty cool.
And we were quite friendly with the people from The Music Man.
Will
from Will and Grace was starring in The Music Man. And then we used to get on the same train as them.
Yeah.
And we had a baseball league with all the other Broadway shows.
Oh, right, they do that.
So once we were playing against the Fonz. I nearly freaked out. So I was just like, is this happening? Like Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
I was like,
oh my God.
And the producers won.
Oh, yeah,
they won the whole
softball.
Yeah. Right.
The tournament.
Cool. Wait, so was Riverdance, I should have looked this up, was Riverdance nominated for any Tony Awards?
No.
No, there was no category.
Oh,
yeah.
At the time there was
not
no
really
category.
A play or
right,
musical.
That's true.
So I think the next year they put a category in.
Right, for more inclusive.
More dance shows.
Yeah.
And so did you guys perform at the Tonys or were they like... Oh.
No, we got invited to the Tonys and I couldn't go. Do you remember?
Yeah.
We were raging because... We modelled ourselves on Britney and Justin Timberlake.
Oh my God,
they
all
like
denim
style. Yeah, that's what we wanted. That we wanted to be planned
the to denim
go
dress
in that,
and the denim suit.
Yeah, like not ironically, like seriously,
seriously.
That is the coolest thing we've ever seen.
Yeah, that's what we're going
so
to go.
So thank God we couldn't make it.
I don't know though. That would be a great throwback Thursday.
Yeah, it would have been.
I'd be like, we're so ahead of the time.
Oh,
we threw it back at the time. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy being on Broadway, or was it like a grueling?
Oh my gosh,
incredible.
Yeah. Looked incredible.
We were 21 and we just had to pinch ourselves all the time.
Right.
Like, this doesn't happen to people like us.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't happen. And we just loved it, didn't we?
Loved it.
Yeah.
I was wild.
You were wild.
Wild. I like tore up the town every weekend, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And shot,
great.
And shot.
And shot and shot.
Especially in the area, there's just, well, I don't know about in 2001.
Prince Street.
You were living in Soho?
No,
we lived in Queens, Astoria.
Astoria. Well, of course, everybody who works on Broadway lives because of the trains.
Yeah. Oh, right,
yeah.
You take the N right to Times Square.
Yeah, the Q, whatever.
And we used to hang out in
Sunnyside?
Sunnyside, yeah, because that's where all the Irish people are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's Josh used to live there.
Yeah.
Once upon a time.
Yeah. But when do you come into the picture, Johnny?
Well, me? I come in many years later.
Yeah.
No, like,
oh, so you're not in the story yet?
Well, not in the story yet.
Okay, so we'll wait till you're in.
Yeah, there's still more Mariah Johnson and then.
Okay, so when you pop into the story, you pop in.
Okay.
So you guys are doing Broadway. It closes.
closes.
Yeah. You're like, oh shit, we have to leave New York.
Yeah, I left again early because I got fed up again. This is a running narrative.
Yeah.
I get bored super
up.
Easy.
Yeah, you're dancing the same thing.
Broadway.
Like, oh.
I know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, left on the 26th of August.
Yeah.
And I joined another show 10 days later.
Wow.
It's just like, oh yeah.
Here we go.
Straight back on it.
What show?
It was called Magic of the Dance.
Magic of the Dance.
And it was a German production.
Oh, so it was in Germany.
Mostly Germany, but they did go outside. We went to Reno, I think.
Yeah, Reno, Brazil, Taiwan.
Brazil, Taiwan,
Canada. What an odd tour.
UK.
Yeah.
Also,
and
Sam was there for 8 years.
Yeah.
I was there for 8 years.
Oh, okay, so those were just stops among the whole tour.
Yeah.
That wasn't like those five stops.
Yeah,
it'd be
a
random five.
Yeah.
Random tour.
Yeah.
Well, we went across Canada in a bus.
Yeah.
Oh.
From Vancouver to Toronto on a bus.
Newfoundland.
Oh yeah, Newfoundland. Yeah,
sleeping on the bus
and everything for three, like this kind of like hockey bus, you know, this like weird
way of the bunk beds.
Oh, yeah.
You were
sleeping,
so you could sleep on it.
Sleeping
yeah.
the whole cast.
Well, very cost effective for the producers,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
Not so much for you guys.
No,
totally.
But surprisingly enough, nobody was fighting or anything.
No,
wow.
Yeah.
And you did that for 8 years.
No,
oh,
that was just for 3 weeks.
That was one.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, you really can rough it.
Yeah. No, that was just for 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. And then what was that show like?
That was
Suzanne personified.
Yeah.
The famine.
Oh.
That was your character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I was the famine.
Black leather.
Oh, black leather costume, big switch. Oh yeah, it was badass.
And you were the famine. What was the story?
Oh, the usual, typical lovers, and then the
famine happened,
the famine.
So they had to leave for America, and then they came to America. Like every Irish dance show has the same storyline.
Yeah.
Was that the story? Like, I remember Riverdance so vividly. I don't remember the story.
Yeah, it's not a loose. It's not even a story, but like there is a part when they come to America, when they leave Ireland and they arrive in America, and there's the tap dancers.
Yeah,
here we are.
Yeah. And the Russians and the Spanish, they're all, you know.
Yes, yeah, in the melting pot that is America.
Well, your costume sounded amazing.
Oh, it was joyous to wear.
Yeah.
You're just like sweating your ass off.
Oh,
I'm in leather.
It was like the pleather.
Pleather.
Yeah.
Oh my God, even hotter.
It was pleather with some Celtic designs on it. And yeah, the skirt was very short.
Right,
like,
well, you were the
famine,
so.
There was no need for the skirt, really. Yeah.
But I joined that show as well. Because they were looking for boys.
Did.
So what did you do between leaving Broadway?
I mean, it was only like 6 months.
Oh.
I roped him in.
So she, because they were doing a DVD, weren't they? So I was like, oh yeah, I'll go. And like on one tour of Brazil, so I'm definitely going to do that.
Yeah.
And then I stayed with it. But then I went to university in London and then started to produce the show. So we were all, and that's where Johnny comes in, because we got together.
Okay.
And then...
Wait, so what did you study in London?
Arts management and theatre.
Mm.
Oh, that was my undergrad degree as well.
Too.
Yes. Well, and our grad degree, I guess, too. And
so,
that is that where you guys met?
We met in London then,
We met, and then he wrote me in to work at that company.
Did you want... Were you going to school for arts management as well?
I wasn't going to school. I wasn't really doing anything at that time.
So I guess I'll do this.
Just going out a lot.
Yeah. It was a great catch.
What is London?
I was between jobs. So I wasn't really doing anything. He said, I'll join work part-time in the office. We need someone...
Office, which is my bedroom.
Yeah. Do you want to come and work there? And I was like, yeah. So, yeah, I started doing that. So then we were, producing it and... sort of doing all the office stuff and the arrangements.
Introduced to the world of Irish dance.
Management and producing.
Because I got injured in a show, and I was like 24, thinking I'm ancient. Like, I'm never going to dance. You know, my dancing career is over.
Right.
Or, you know, it'd be ridiculous for me to be dancing at 25. And so I was like, I need to be serious now and get you know, start thinking of what I can do.
Be an adult or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. So, and because I think I left high school... But I was always quite academic. I something like I had to prove to myself that I could do it.
Mm.
So I just needed to get out of my system. And I loved it. Like, it was brilliant, you know. And it kind of opened up my eyes creatively to think about, you know, not only just Irish dancing, the technical side of it, but the theatrical and artistic and political side of theatre. Kind of, it was just like, oh my God, like, it was expansive, you know. And then Johnny did a degree in film, video, interactive arts. So he was going through this journey as well of like, there's so much out there, you know, that we could feed off of.
And Suzanne's just somewhere on a sleeper bus.
Wearing leather.
Being a famine.
Yeah, being the famine.
So how did you then transition into producing, what was the show called?
Magic of the Dance.
I was like, it's not Magic Hands.
No.
That could be a name for our next show.
Magic of the Hands.
Yeah, Magic of the Dance.
I ended up in London and the producer was very much, he didn't want people to leave the show if he liked them. Mm. So he was just trying to keep hold of people. And I was like at university, I thought, great, I get to, you know, part-time job and I get to travel on the off times. And, you know, myself and Johnny came to New York to audition for tap dancers and stayed here for a week while we were at university. So is that glamorous side to it as well, as like I'm in.
And we go on tour every summer then, and over Christmas we would go on the German tours and I'd be the company manager. Suzanne was a dance captain on tour. So she was in charge on tour. We were in charge at home and we just had it just became loads of fun and we got really into it because I think we're all, I don't know, geeks or something. We can do this. This is, you can just
change the show and I can hire the best dancers.
Take it everywhere. We're going to change the world.
That's like a typical 25-year-old.
Totally.
I can do anything.
But the self-producing sets you up so well for being a variety artist, like later on, like promoting yourself, writing like loads of versions of your acts. It's all those same skills.
Yeah. It was one experience we had that was, the show was double booked. So we had to create a whole new cast, find the deck for only five shows. So one was going to Taiwan and one was going to stay in Germany. And so we found a whole new cast, trained them in, bought the costumes, the three of us. And we had rehearsals for 3 days and then we went on tour and we did it. And then after that, we were just like, oh God, if we can do that, we're not scared of anything anymore. So that inspired us to do our own.
That was the time, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was it. We were still working for a producer, the German producer who owned the show at Magic was. We were like, we can do our own thing. Yeah, we can do this.
Yeah.
So how does this transition to becoming viral YouTube stars with your hand tapping?
We just started messing around with video because I was in university. I needed someone to film.
Oh my God.
It was just like, what can we do? You know? And I was like, I've got two super talented people. So they just became sort of quite muses to me because we were so busy working and I was doing my degree that it just, everything just, became.
And also it was something that Johnny liked showing people on a night out.
Yeah.
So we were like, right, you two, sit down at the table and show everybody.
Yeah. I just thought it was really, because it was like this sort of party trick that they did. Because I thought Irish dancing was awesome. I thought it was hilarious when I met Nathan. He was in Riverdale. So I took the mickey out of him a lot. But I just thought it was amazing. Like the skill was amazing. I'd never seen anything like it. I wasn't from a performance-y type world or anything. So I just thought they were amazing. And then, they used to just, do the hands.
Is that something you actually do? And to be like, this is, when you do ballet, you're like, fuete,
fuete. Exactly. Yeah. Oh. People like that. You know that step, we'll start off with a step that goes like this, and then we'll finish with that. Okay. You're just practicing, or what's that step again? But I always used to take the mic as well when I was drunk, kind of like doing stupid hands, like pretending like picking my nose, doing an Irish dance, blessing myself. It's a silly thing.
Right.
And then we started doing it together. And then he'd always be like, oh my God, you have to see them do this thing together. And so we'd just do it like when we were drunk.
Yeah.
The hand tapping thing.
I just thought it was like ridiculous.
But you did it without,
so stupid.
But it was without tapping. Like it was just the visual of the marking. And it was only, I had to do my final piece for university and we needed to make a trailer. We decided to do the Edinburgh Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, bang, we're going to do the Edinburgh Fringe. And we started with just looks and pictures. Nothing, no content or anything like that, just the visuals. So we sold it, we got it booked, we had people interested. And
we were like, we have to,
oh my God, now we have to figure out a show.
Yeah, and we had to make a trailer. So we only had one day, we were going to go outside and dance, but it was raining. So we were like, what can we do? And we're just like, okay, let's just sit in the kitchen at the table and do it. Just do it, but make the noise. And it would add that in. And we just messed around and made that first video, which was which is a bit more, wasn't the music or anything, it was more like a video art piece. but it was just awesome, wasn't it? Like, we really liked it, and everyone else seemed to really like it, because it was really weird.
Yeah.
So what was the show at the Edinburgh Fringe you guys then had to make?
It was, again, we were hitting 30, and we were like, Suzanne cannot be in a leather dress, be in the famine at 30.
Back to the famine. God.
We've
got to get around
it. Save Suzanne. But neither of us felt that we were done dancing, but we wanted to carry on. And also we thought, how can we carry on dancing and be, if it sounds a bit, but be cooler, be more relaxed and be a bit, not having to dress it up in these leather trousers and all that. And then Johnny was a huge influence because he was an outside eye. He was, giving us loads of references that we could, use. Mm-hmm. And some of the experimental videos that we did together were like catalysts for numbers in the show. So we'd start with a video and then we'd create a live number from that. And then they would serve as like transitions. So it was kind of like a sketch show, really, of different pieces and dropping Irish dancing into these different scenarios to see how it stood up outside of the regular confines of Irish dancing,
Right. So, what was it called?
Up and Over It, an Irish dance extravaganza.
Oh,
okay,
nice.
It was an Irish dance spectacular.
Spectacular.
Which was tongue-in-cheek because, it was really weird. And, the audience had to sit through, four video art pieces and quite droney some numbers. So there were some really fun numbers, but there was also some numbers that we really pushed it, so it was supposed to be quite tongue-in-cheek, wasn't it?
That's perfect for a fringe festival.
Yeah, totally.
It was our experiment. It was right, we've tried all this stuff, so we all the pieces sort of sat on their own, five pieces, four videos.
Yeah,
let's just we weaved them together as well as we could, and we thought, let's just see if it works. And after the first dress rehearsal, we all, the lights came on at the end, and it was just, the stage was full of, because we had so many props and costumes, it was an absolute mess. We all just looked at each other and walked home. It's oh my God, we're going to completely embarrass ourselves. This is going to bomb. This is the worst idea we've ever had. We spent a fortune doing it.
That's the fringe, though, right?
Yeah.
All those
feelings.
Yeah.
But then with an audience, it actually went really well. And they really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And
we took a lot of the props out.
Yeah.
After we saw, I can't actually reach that, we were like, just scrap everything and just have the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a good learning thing.
So when did you guys realize that, the hand tapping thing could be a thing?
Well, after the Edinburgh Fringe,
you went on holidays.
It was really well received, but nobody wanted to book it afterwards because we just thought we were going to go to Broadway straight away.
We've already been there,
awesome.
So
yeah, exactly. We know
next.
The people.
That's
where we're going.
But every time we picked up the phone to book it in the theatre, they were like, "Irish dancing? No thanks."
Yeah, because they didn't want to.
Because the market was saturated with really bad Irish dance shows. I mean, something different. It's like pop, and it's like this. Nothing.
Everyone's the same thing. Oh, we're being different, but they
weren't.
Right,
this
but they
actually
weren't.
Weird.
Yeah.
So you just couldn't get a foot in the door.
Right.
In any theatre.
Yeah.
Because people just thought it was.
It was
more
Michael
insane.
Flatley
yeah.
and
yeah.
or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we were like, right, let's make a viral video, and Johnny was like, it has to be the hands, and then We Now Speak Americana was number one in the UK. And we were
before it was number one.
Oh,
we were on tour or doing shows.
You were on holidays.
And they just kept playing the song all the time. And I hated that song. And then we were in the car and it'd keep coming on all three of us. And we were like, the songs, we did our show in Cardiff.
Didn't
we? We booked the venue ourselves just to do it for our family. Not for our family, but so
vanity projects.
He turned up.
He did book us. We didn't pay for that. And I was like, I hate this song. Okay, it's got to be this song. So then, because it just was an earworm.
Oh yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So we just did it to that, and thought it's got to be that because the last hands video we did went really well. After the shows, everybody asked the same question, what is that? The hands thing. People had never sort of seen it, so. Just thought, that's it. Okay, so we ticked all the boxes and just threw it out into the world and thought, okay, if it's going to happen, it'll happen with this, and we'll see what happens.
And what happened? Did it go viral instantly, or was it zero for weeks and weeks and weeks?
No. The Irish dancing community just went nuts. Because if it was the first time, I think, since Riverdance, maybe, that they'd seen something that they were like, oh my God, I can share this with my friends, and it's not embarrassing. Or, it was something
new.
It was new, and it was cool. I can do that too. So they kind of spread the word. And then it got to 20,000 hits, and our previous video got to 5,000. So we were like, oh my God, we're so chuffed. We're on cloud 9. Let's go buy ourselves bikes.
And
we weren't
yeah, the Fixie Bites were kind
off,
of just...
We weren't earning any money off the viral video.
No.
Because
no.
It all went
it was
to
just
the
to
artists.
Celebrate.
It was just like, yeah, it was so great.
Yeah. And we wanted bikes for ages, and we were like, if it gets 20,000, we'll treat ourselves by bike. They weren't expensive bikes, but they were good bikes.
Yeah.
And then it did a couple of months then, where it sort of was going up a bit, but then, you know, just sort of quite slowly, and we were like, oh, okay, well, that's nice anyway, 20,000 hits. And then I think it was like the September or something, and just, I don't know, something happened.
Was that Perez?
A few people. It started in Europe. It was like, all of a sudden, it started going up really quick. And it was like, oh my God, Eastern Europe are just sharing this like mad. And then it was Russians, and then it was Chinese. It sort of went around the world that way.
Yeah.
And then hit America, and that was it then.
It hit America, it was...
Because it was on all the TV shows, and...
That's great. Did you mean Perez Hilton?
Yes.
Yeah, Perez Hilton.
Whatever happened to his
this.
Website?
I know. Thank God it's gone.
Yeah. I think he was too mean.
Yeah.
It's not cool to be mean anymore.
No.
Yeah. Ellen tweeted it.
Ellen tweeted it.
Oh.
Justin Bieber tweeted it.
Yeah.
We got invited on Ellen, but I missed the email.
Oh!
But I didn't see it until like 2 weeks later.
I'm hearing this for the first time.
Yeah. Because everything was just like going really mad then. Because everyone in America wanted to know who they were and like would they come and perform. And
everyone was just emailing you.
Well, because we were like really, because we'd done the producing of the commercial show before, we did everything really perfect. We presented this idea of this, like, professional company, didn't we?
Yeah,
and,
just three people.
Just three people. Like, so I was the manager and I was the field and everything. We had a special, an info act, even though it was all just us doing everything. And
it's like us.
Just being, self-producing.
Hello at Hideaway Circus.
Yeah.
Email them. It's really Josh.
What are you talking about? Email us to our staff.
That are all
and
in
also
the back.
Edit the podcast our sound engineering. So what was the first like variety show that was like really booking you to do that?
Well, The Box.
The Box.
Yeah.
The Box in London?
Box in London was just opening. Was like an empty shell.
Oh, yeah.
And Simon wanted to meet us.
Yeah.
So he brought us in to have a
couple weeks after it opened.
Before it opened.
Before it opened.
So it was like a mess in there. So we went in to meet him in there.
Like in January. I only
say
this
before.
Because
yeah.
Simon was like, who should we book? And I showed like two or three viral videos and you guys were
amazing.
One of them. And it was just all the Americans who were sitting there like trying to throw out ideas of people.
Yeah.
And then he started calling people, which is why I asked, was it right at the beginning? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it was.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much.
I saw like the week before.
All
right. So really, Johnny,
so
Josh is the...
I'll take credit for your worldwide success.
Info at Josh.
Are you looking for a cut? Is that what you're
So that's what I have here.
2% royalties,
please.
We have
for you as well.
but we didn't work... He wasn't the first... He was the first person interested.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, we'd like you to work in the London one. And I said... he said, we also have a New York one. And I said, oh, we're going to do Rachel Ray, the TV show.
Yeah.
He said, oh, great. So if you're there, then do the box. So that was... So the Box New York was our first go at it.
Did Simon make you do it with, like, cocaine and crazy costumes and the black eyes originally? Or was that, like, version two and you originally had a different...
He just wanted something...
We brought it.
Adult. He's like,
if
you can bring something a bit edgier. Like, we said, what do you want?
Yeah.
When we met him in London, we were like, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
We'll design something. So obviously he said, late night, told us what it was like.
Yeah.
Went off and...
Because the physical abuse, the bottle, the head smashing on the desk, all that is amazing.
Well, that was all in our first show. That was in our first Edinburgh show.
Oh.
But not drunk.
Yeah. We still do that. That's our, the bread and butter act now. And that's from our first... it's from the first video that we did in the kitchen. It's an argument, two people back and forth. And it's grown from that.
Wow, that's
but
so cool.
There's still that act.
And I remember when you were doing it in London, there was like all challenges with like getting the table correct and like the mic for the table and for your feet as well, because you're tapping and your hand tapping.
Well, that was a huge... We didn't even have a table. Like, we just didn't, like... We'd never done... We had a table in Edinburgh, but then we didn't have like a touring table that we took around places. So then we just did it, like, I think they had like a camping table that we did in the box. Do you remember?
Yeah, and then the sound guy took it.
Yeah, we used to tell people, do you have a table that we can do it on? And then we did another show in London, and they didn't have a table. So the producer drove me around all these places looking for a table. We ended up doing it on a child's table, which is about like a foot off the floor.
So our knees were like, so we couldn't tap the table? because it was so low, and we were just like.
And then we started buying IKEA tables, and then I started making the tables, and so then now we have one that I make that's specially.
Especially designed.
Yeah, it's a drum.
Right. This is pretty good.
So what was it like going from meeting all of the like other dancers to then all of a sudden being in the variety world? Because it's a pretty different scene, like culturally.
Yeah, and especially going straight to the box.
The box is the shocker of all.
I remember just putting on my makeup or my bruises and then just like... I couldn't look left or right. I was like,
boobs.
My God, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And Rosewood was one of the first people that we met.
Yeah.
And she was naked.
Right. Totally naked, but came up to
introduce
herself anyway.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like baptism by fire, wasn't it?
We met Elaine Kramer.
Elaine Kramer.
We met you the first night. Very first.
Oh, when he was much more ripped.
It was New York.
Whoa, where'd you go? Yeah, we had Elaine Kramer on the podcast when Big Apple was in town.
Yeah.
Oh, she's so lovely.
She's so
I was like, I saw your mom come out, hand you your crossbow.
At the box too.
Yeah.
With her mom.
And Vegas.
Always.
Always. I'm also her dad. It was her dad at the box, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
First time.
Yeah. Her dad was on tour, so.
Yeah. Mom was in Vegas.
So was Rose Chapel Lie your next variety, main variety show after that? Or did you do La Soiree before that?
We did loads in London, cabaret.
So like
in London.
Café de Paris,
Circus Restaurant.
Yeah.
Supper Club used to be over there as well.
Yeah. That's sort of like not the box, as bad at the box, but they do have like some pretty adult stuff.
Yeah,
there,
they
right?
do. Yeah. We did everything. Medium Rare.
Yeah.
And then we did La Soiree at the Roundhouse, which for us was like a huge step up. You know, like in the cabaret world,
we're
just like, oh my God, this is it.
That was the most nervous I ever was.
Really?
Yeah.
Going out for the first to act in.
Was Amy Saunders in La Soiree when you were in it?
No. We had Mario, Queen of the Circus.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But we'd seen La Soiree in the West End before we'd even know what variety was, when we were just
enjoying
dancers.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
right,
we had so much respect.
Living in London.
We just thought, like, what is going on? Like, we had never seen anything like it. So to be then, to go from like being a civilian to actually being in it, being one of those freaks, was just like,
it was crazy. I think that's why I was so nervous. Like, I remember years before watching the skating Willers, just going, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Right, and coming from such a different world. I was in the theater world and then met Josh, and transitioning into the circus world, just even like conversing with people who are in circus versus theater is so different.
And
then you're like, why do they all hate me? And you're like, oh wait, no, that's just like, because theater, you're like, hi, you know, how's it going? And you're like, oh wow. But it is. It's just like a very different world.
But jumping back to the Roundhouse for a second. So you've been doing it in all these like super small environments, presumably, if like those places you listed.
Yeah.
So what was it like going from doing it in these like small stages to all of a sudden doing it in this room for like 1,000 people, like 50 rows back
terrified.
Or whatever?
I remember just being numb, like the first time we were wheeled out, just like, oh, I want to vomit.
Brett Haylock was brilliant because he had so much faith in it. Do you know, that he just said, no, it's going to work. And he was watching it in the dress rehearsal. But I think because of the viral video, we were doing these weird gigs, being booked sometimes for like a theatre awards in front of 800 people, do you know, and then doing it in a small pub in you know, for a chicken dinner and a bottle of wine, do you know? So it was we said yes to everything because it wasn't by design
everything.
That we got into variety. We didn't sit down and go, let's go, just do
that's
variety.
That's a good scene to go be in.
We just didn't even know it existed. So we just got these calls from people in variety, and then so we just discovered it slowly. You know, we were from a very, you know, dance background.
The first week in La Soiree, because we just went and you did like a test show, didn't you? And I was like a real like dance mom, like feeling sick, like watching it. And it went well. So they were
like hit it.
So they were like, okay, brilliant, you know, yeah, come and do the next, you know, 2 weeks or something. But then that first week we already had like another like 4 or 5 gigs booked. So, like,
wow.
So one night on a Saturday night, we did 4 gigs. So like we did the first gig in La Soiree, and then I was getting a table and waiting for them, and we went down the road, did another gig, back to La Soiree, did another gig, and then into the box.
Yeah.
So, and then you did the box all week that week, so going on at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, that's a harsh schedule.
But they loved it. Like, they were workhorses, and it was brilliant, like, because they would just
do
anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the same time we got La Soiree, we also got a call from Crazy Horse to come to Paris to do a live audition. in front of an audience. So it literally, it just kind of, everything happened at the same time. He just didn't know.
Right. How, oh, wait, to say, year, no, is this?
Crazy.
This is all happening,
wow,
in,
oh,
20, okay.
No, 2010, end of 2010, going into,
yeah.
Yeah, so end of,
yeah,
2010 into 2011, and then,
yeah,
yeah, Roundhouse of 2012, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, because, like, you also got booked on, like, you did America's Got Talent as a guest, as a YouTube star.
Oh, that's right. That was just...
But you didn't,
oh,
want to compete
that
on it. You were,
no,
just... That's the way to do it.
Especially,
yeah,
that
was,
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
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 And that was 2011, was it? 2010?
Yeah, 2011, that was. Yeah.
A real varied mix of, like, stuff.
And then we also did Britain's Got Talent as competitors, because, yeah, which we kind of regretted, didn't we? That was really,
yeah,
difficult.
How did it go?
We got to the semi-finals, and it was all fine. It's just the way that they treat
they
you
treat
and the
you
way
as a,
that,
yeah,
you know, it was really... But
like,
really
they've,
yeah,
been asking for, like, a year, you know, just constantly ringing and emailing, do it, do it. And we said no, we said no. And because we were working loads in cabaret, but we hadn't done our show for ages, we thought, in the end, we were like, oh, well, let's give it a go, and we might book some shows. Because people in the UK are a bit, they weren't, they didn't get it as much, you,
yeah,
know? We didn't have that big of a reputation there, so we just thought we'd try it.
Mm.
Yeah, it was a real experience.
Yeah. And you don't get booked?
No,
from it.
No.
We got one bat mitzvah.
Huh.
In Manchester, off the back of it.
Because,
but they
did you
really,
do it?
Yeah,
we
did,
did
it, yeah,
it, but
you
their
did
first
it
choice, they wanted One Direction.
But they couldn't afford, so they got us.
It was like, oh,
hello,
the child must be so disappointed.
Just
bless
Leo,
her.
What,
yeah.
Where's Liam?
Yeah.
What's the main one? Harry!
Harry, yeah. Who are these middle-aged people back on the table?
No, the kid, you know, at school is like, oh, my parents are going to get One Direction. And then,
yeah,
all the kids come like, oh.
Yeah, they've,
yeah,
aged really badly. Yeah.
This was weird people in the corner.
One of them grew their hair out.
Yeah.
How did you guys like living in Vegas for like the 9 months, almost a year you guys were there for?
Yeah.
Rose Rabbit
Lie.
It was
nine,
great.
Nine months.
Yeah. It was
for
great.
Vegas Nocturne,
yeah.
Rose Rabbit Lie.
Yeah. And, and thanks for that again, Josh.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Yes.
2%
anytime
again.
I can show somebody your video,
go.
I'll take
yeah.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. We were so,
yeah.
I mean, we said no at the beginning, the first time they offered it.
Yeah.
Just, I think we just didn't feel that we enjoyed doing a variety of different things. That was when we got a buzz from,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And then it got to a stage, I think we were in Ibiza doing a show.
Ross came too.
And Ross came.
Leo.
He was so charming.
Yeah.
And I was
and
like,
he
I think
is,
we should
he's,
do it.
Yeah. He's very, yeah. He can
he's
convince
convincing.
It. Yeah.
Yes.
Very.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was a good night.
Yeah.
A few cocktails and we're off to Vegas.
Nice.
Yeah.
How'd you like living in Vegas?
It was challenging at the end. But at the beginning, like, we thought we were Frank Sinatra, didn't we?
Yeah.
Just,
oh,
just,
yeah.
So you guys
yeah.
got, like, a convertible or anything and drive around town? And...
The thing is, we were a bit... Because I think because of our background, we didn't quite do it properly. Because we just lived in this house, like, quite far out because it was nice and big. We'd all lived together. It had a pool.
Yeah, we all decided to live together.
But we shared a car. Like, we all got one
yeah.
car between us because we just...
Yeah.
It was a cheap car that we bought online. Like, we just didn't want to spend any money. So
at least
then,
you had a pool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was really dirty. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So we were just... So it was really good fun. But then we ended up finding ourselves sort of a little bit...
Out.
Of it.
Yeah.
Mm. And we worked so hard on
yeah,
our show.
Always
like, it was a long show anyway, and then we were in for rehearsals trying to change it all the time. So it was like it was tough going.
It was never
so
finished.
We had no life.
No.
You would go
time.
At like 2
never
in the
finished.
Afternoon and then come home at 2
after it opened,
yeah.
The official opening, I was like, I am out. This
yeah.
I can't handle this
That's
anymore.
Right.
And then you
yeah.
guys had another like 6 months.
Yeah.
So for that show, for each of these shows, for the variety shows, I understand a little bit more. But do you guys like, you know, Spencer Novick.
Yeah.
He, you know, does the radio act and he kind of changes his act to fit each, like, feeling of the show.
Yeah.
Is that what you guys kind of do? Like, you have these things that you can do and you kind of mold it to be the genre of the show that you're in?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we were a lot more like that before. And now after our experiences, we kind of learned now to say, no, we trust
this
choice and we know
yeah.
that this will work.
Yeah.
So when they try to say, oh, can you try to do it with this song? Or can you try wear those costumes? Or enter this way? We're like,
yeah.
no, it doesn't. We know we've burned ourselves so many times.
yeah.
Right, like it does not
this,
work.
This doesn't work. This
right.
works.
We know what works.
You know?
Yeah.
And that takes a long time to get that confidence to stand up to people and say, I'm not wearing that. Or
yeah.
I'm not doing
I've had
it.
Enough pleather.
Yeah. And Johnny was a massive help. To have that third person outside.
Yeah, that's not
yeah.
you guys.
So we can step back a little bit
yeah.
from it. That was
Yeah, I think
awesome.
People tend to... like one thing that we've noticed now working with a lot of different artists is that the other producers who maybe didn't start as artists or like don't have that creative kind of like understanding take things from the performers and like, oh my God, they're being so difficult. And it's like, especially in variety and circus, you're really self-producing yourselves.
Yeah.
And I think
and
that's like
to please as well. Cause performers, you love performing
right.
And you want people
like,
to be
I gotta
happy.
Do it. Right.
Mm. So I could at least be there and be
yeah, and
no.
Be like, no, this isn't
yeah,
working.
No,
yeah,
not wearing that.
It's a really critical role that like a lot of performers
yeah.
don't get to have. And
yeah.
You, and Johnny, you fill that role.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Well, in a way, it's like almost more old school, like family style circus and variety, because it's like, you know, gotta talk to my husband. Sorry,
yeah.
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 I don't
yeah.
talk to you directly.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't talk to. He's like, gotta talk to my wife.
Yeah, yeah. Because they have this amazing reputation in London. Everybody just thought they were the nicest people, and. They were never any trouble at shows.
Little did they know.
Because they never discussed anything with anybody, did you? You didn't have to argue about money, argue about
right.
the state of the stage or whatever. Yeah. They would just be like this, and then just be like...
yeah, Johnny!
So I knew the word, would, yeah, people would roll their eyes at. They got to just be, yeah, professional
right.
and then, yeah.
So tell us about the show that you're in right now in New York that's going to be on Thursday. Hopefully this episode will go out on Wednesday so people
oh,
will have
great.
Some time to listen to it
yeah.
and buy tickets.
Yeah.
Riot.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the show is called Riot, and it is an Irish variety show. We did it at the Dublin Fringe last year, and it is we have a there's a street poet, a famous drag queen called Panty Bliss, who went viral a few years ago with a very political speech in full drag.
Oh,
on the
wow.
stage of the National Theatre in Ireland about homophobia and being called, you know, in an, how you have to check yourself as a gay man. And it was,
mm.
you know, it was, and it happened at the same time as the gay marriage referendum in Ireland. So Panty really became a figurehead as, you know, equal rights and, you know, LGBTQT rights and LGBTQ plus plus.
That's it.
Rights.
I know.
So, yeah, so she's in it. There's us, there's Lords of Strut, who are another working cabaret variety act. They're like comedians, clowns, acrobats. And then we have four amazing singers who bring that kind of Irish kind of feel to you know, those haunting,
uh-huh.
you know, words. But the show is modern and forward-thinking and anti-establishment, anti-Catholic Church, looking for like a new island, not Ireland as this cultural museum that people go to look at the past. You know, it's kind of presenting this new version of Irishness.
Cool.
And Ireland, it just went down a storm in Ireland,
yeah.
didn't it? People just really, it really resonated with people.
Is it coming from a pre-existing company or you guys like just devised it amongst yourselves? How did it
it's this is This is Pop Baby is the company and they've been doing these kind of club nights and
mm-hmm.
and theatre shows and lots of different things in Ireland for kind of, you know, underground and also at the National Theatre and this really eclectic mix of work. And so they had this idea to bring together all these people that have been kind of touching on Irishness separately and then bringing them in together to kind
mm.
of form this beast of a show. And it is really fun. I mean, there's a lot of hard-hitting politics in there, but it is a good, fun, silly glitter show.
Sounds
well.
Like perfect for New York.
Yeah.
A little bit of politics, but mostly fun and glitter.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
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 Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm really excited to see it. Also, the photos for the show
look
so good.
Yeah.
Like, I love your photo that you guys are in the subway. And that's like
yeah.
spandex outfits.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing. How do I get one of those outfits?
You can have mine if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably the same height. Actually, no,
yeah.
you're probably taller.
Well, maybe. Without my heels on.
Yeah, without your triple
yeah,
heels.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you guys on tour with this show for a while, or is this like the end of a run, or where is it?
No, we go to Toronto in June for a 5-week run in, what's the festival?
Illuminato Festival.
Yeah, Illuminato
mm.
Festival
yeah.
or something like that. Yeah.
But the show also went to Sydney Festival.
It did. It
and
just
Melbourne.
Came. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they came straight here from Melbourne.
And you guys
mm-hmm.
were with it in Melbourne?
No.
No. So we were booked elsewhere.
Yeah. We were in Palazzo.
Oh, Palazzo. We haven't talked about Palazzo at all.
Oh,
what is,
Palazzo.
Real quick, what's Palazzo like as a variety act? Like you're just going around the German and maybe.
Well, maybe explain
yeah.
what Palazzo
is.
Just for people.
Oh, yeah.
Palazzo is a dinner show, Spiegel Tent dinner show variety.
In Germany.
In Germany and Austria.
Hence why you're based out of Vienna at the moment.
Yes. They have 7 tents at the moment. I think it's 6 tents. Yeah.
Yeah, lots of good gig though, because you can just do it for so long, right? They'll have so many shows that you can rotate through.
Well, if there's 7 tents, that means you have a contract for 7 years if they keep you.
Right.
You know?
Wow.
So we done Berlin. We did Berlin, didn't we?
Yeah, it's
and
be
we did Hamburg
next year.
Oh.
And then we did went to Vienna. Yeah. But we only swore we were gonna do one because it was Berlin. Oh, we'll do Berlin.
Yeah.
And then it's such an amazing company to work for and run by brilliant people.
Yeah.
And you just feel like I just love being there, you know, and this really nice.
And also it's been a real opportunity for you both to grow as performers because you've developed your act into that sort of hours long thing of you've start the act at 7 in the audience and you've redeveloped your sort of clowning the character stuff, and it's just awesome.
We're fake guests, we arrive and we get slowly more drunk and we embarrass, we're clowning under tables and shouting over, just being drunk and ridiculous until we end up on stage.
Oh my god, did people get it or are they annoyed by you?
Oh yeah, totally. The more annoyed they are, but I'm like, yes.
It's working.
Yeah.
Because
you really
when
push it,
when we go to do the act, that it's the
release of oh my god, these
the
people are so
of,
annoying.
Oh my
yeah.
god.
They're the worst.
I just and they can tell you off and then they're like, oh, I'm sorry for telling you all.
Sorry.
So, yeah, if the longer the joke is, it's...
Yeah, it's really good fun, isn't
yeah.
it?
So if they miss you while you're in New York, head to Vienna to see you next?
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
to go.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Toronto.
Or Toronto this summer.
And we're also taking our children's show to
China
for 7 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
What's the name of your children's show?
Into the Water.
Oh, that's nice. Is there water in the show?
We're on an island. We wake up on a mine and we don't know how we got there.
Oh, cool. I saw the artwork for it.
Also kind of
terrifying. Very pretty.
Yeah, that's Johnny. Johnny does all our artwork.
Nice.
Yeah. Some amazing projections.
No,
that's so cool. How long is the kids show?
It's an hour.
Yeah, 55 minutes. Yeah, an hour,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we're doing a month in Shanghai and then 3 weeks in Beijing. So that's going to
be really
good.
Wow.
So do you talk in it?
No.
Well, that's great for booking it.
Yeah.
Shanghai,
totally. And this show is basically myself and Suzanne's characters getting to know each other over that hour. Like, we're complete strangers waking up and just how that relationship kind of develops over that time.
This is more of an overarching question, but you guys have been partners on stage for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's, a trick to, success? And, there's so many, particularly circus performers and acrobat couples that, they do it for 3 or 4 years and they're like, all right, I'm over you. off to somebody new or, I want to be a solo artist. But clearly you guys have done it for a while and done it successfully and everybody's been super happy and getting along great. Is there a trick to it? Is there something that makes you guys special that makes that work?
It's been, how many years has it been?
21 years.
Yeah.
I think that it's, you have to be friends, don't you?
Totally. We were friends first.
First. You have to have that friendship
And when you forget the friendship, that's when things go wrong. When you actually don't... you have to remind yourself what you liked about each other. Like any relationship,
Right.
It has to take work and you have to just, make sure that the fun element is more important.
And we've
than
had
work.
Those times, that we'd have to take a step back and remember that and have a chat.
Totally.
About
a few
these
months out.
yeah, and have a chat and go, nothing else matters, just the friendship.
Well, it's hard. We work together, obviously live together. And it is difficult. But then when we're not together... Or, I'm working on something different. It's almost worse because you're like, I'm annoyed, but I don't know why you're annoyed because we haven't been together all day. Or, we're not working on the same thing. But it is nice. And I guess, it helps that you're not in a relationship. Romantic one.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'd often finish each other's...
sentences.
You can say sandwiches.
Oh, there are Frozen references.
She's gonna see a lot of film. She was on tour.
I know. Yeah.
She was being a famine.
On a bus with 19 other dancers.
There's no famine in Riot.
Oh, great.
We don't mention the famine.
Everyone eats a ton. Super well fed.
Yes.
Can you guys do a little thingamabob on this table so people can hear it?
Yeah, totally.
Is it move a lot? Is that good?
Oh no, it's more stable than our table.
You guys can take this.
Yeah, we don't need it.
Yeah. Okay.
Should we push it down? I don't know.
I think we'll get it.
Okay.
How far will we go?
Just to the first bit. Yeah. 16 bars.
Okay. Bars. Clear my throat.
Nice.
So now my next question is, how do you not mess up? I'd be like, shit. Oh, I forgot that one.
Have you bruised your fingers and knuckles and things before?
Yeah, definitely.
Your hands definitely look different.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? In what way?
Yeah. Well, I cut myself at the airport, took a chunk out of my finger and didn't even notice. I was like, I was at the thing, I was like, why is there blood on my jumper? And I was like, oh my God, there's a piece of my finger missing.
Because you have like, such
missing.
Calluses.
Like, yeah. It's like aerial as well, you know, you lose feeling, it's...
Yeah, you did the straps. Mm.
Yeah, and then we got tattoos here, and he was like, oh, that was nothing. And I was like, oh, good, he got it. So then I went, I was like, because he has like no feeling here, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, they're so bad.
I can freak people out taking things out of the oven.
Oh, yeah?
Everyone's like, oh, my God. I was like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. But, like, how do you not mess up?
Oh,
practice.
We do mess up. Things happen. But just, again, 21 years.
Right,
it's such a shorthand. And when you're performing, you must know this, when you're performing, things slow down so much that... You know, a split second, if I see Suzanne's hand goes, you kind of follow or you can correct yourself. So it's a really weird thing that happens on stage, doesn't it, with time?
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know that, like, cup thing, the cup song from Pitch Perfect? I tried to learn that, and I got it, like, once, and I was like, yes! And I was like, okay, Mom, watch! And I was like, can't do it.
Always. Back to the family shows.
The family. Yeah.
So we usually wrap up each podcast with the same three questions for all the guests.
Oh.
The first one being, and maybe you guys or all three of you can individually answer, or maybe it's a group answer, what is a really good or really bad piece of advice you've gotten before?
Do Britain's Got Talent. No, a bad advice. And what's good advice?
That's probably good.
That's good advice.
Good advice. Well, I think, it's not really advice, but people have been so generous along the way. Like Mookie put us in touch with La Soirée. And like I said, she was such a fan when she saw us. And she's like, you have to speak to Brett Haylock. Here's his email address. And that really kind of changed it from us just doing clubs to being on, on stage in Variety. So it wasn't advice, but for me that was like such a lovely, generous thing to do, you know. And there's been lots of other examples.
Did you get any advice when you were younger, like before Up and Over It, that kept you on, like your dancing journey, which is what, like, why you are here now, because you were so, you know, rehearsed and in it. Was there anything ever said that kept you there?
I don't know. One person said to me when I went on tour that be careful, people will really, if you're not careful, people will take from you. And I didn't even know what that meant until I got to about 35. And I was like, okay. Because your first impression is just to be nice and lovely and nothing's a problem.
And say yes to everything.
And say yes, exactly. Yeah. But you have to learn that actually saying no and sticking to your guns, and that helps when you're in a team. It's harder if you're a solo artist.
Yeah.
Well, you only learn learned that in their 30s, really.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to say no and stick by your guns and know exactly what you want.
Yeah, definitely. Just trust yourself.
Trust yourself. That's a good one, yeah.
Because if not, like with music and the costumes and things like that, like, just wear what you want to wear. Yeah.
That's great. And so this sort of jumps back to how the way you phrase the question. For somebody who is like 15 or 16, wants to be a performer, learning to do whatever skill they're doing, is there like a movie or a TV show or like a live show or any like an album, like an artistic piece of reference you think they have to experience or listen to or see?
Johnny, you can answer this too.
Yeah.
Showgirls.
Oh my God, Naomi.
Yeah.
First days.
Yeah. She really wants something and she goes out and gets it.
That is my bridesman. He would watch it every Valentine's Day when he was like younger and at NYU. And then when we became friends, he was like, "Do you want to come to the Showgirls Valentine's Day?" And I was like, "What the what?" And then I saw, I was like, "Oh my god, I have to be here every year. It's the best movie.
It's so good."
But just don't push anybody down the stairs. It's not. You're not gonna.
When people are watching, don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Johnny was good for us because he made us look at other things outside of our reference. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to circus school or dancing, or you can get so kind of involved what other people are doing, what's been done before, and that you get kind of blinkered. Mm-hmm. Just look at, go to the museum, you know, look at a piece of art and create a piece from that. Do you know, like, just think outside the box.
Yeah, I think it's looking at stuff, looking at artistic work that has got nothing to do with what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
low and high art.
Low, yeah. I'm all about the low art.
And go to as many shows as possible.
Yeah, you've got to see everything. You won't enjoy everything, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You don't have to like it. But if you see it, then at least you will know something a bit more about yourself. Probably.
And like everybody's things on Instagram.
Yeah, all that the liking on Instagram.
That's good advice. I think some people like try to stick to things that they like, and they're like, "Well, I don't like this." And you're like, "Well, you don't really know because you haven't actually experienced it." We're talking about this, about people who say they don't like traditional circus.
Yeah.
It's like, but how can you say that?
Yeah.
It's like me liking, I don't like Golden Age musicals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, you don't like one, like from that era.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
so
it's interesting, but
yeah,
I think that's good advice. Like going to things that even you think you don't like.
Yeah. And also
yeah.
try everything and just do it. Just be, if you want to be an artist, just be an artist. But like go to classes, go to one class of an art, you know, of painting or one class of dance. Just go out there and try everything.
And don't stop making things. I mean, the reason why we like this is because we're all creative people. And I think what happens, and it's happened to us, when you get an act, you just kind of go, "Oh, that's the act now."
There you go.
And, and it just kills you slowly over time. You just have to keep, even if it's just, you know, making a podcast or doing a painting or like you just create. We are creative people. And I think when you don't create, it changes something in you.
Yeah. And that's when things don't go well.
Yeah.
And don't think you can't. Like you can't do it.
Just do it.
See
what happens. Failure's
fine.
Yeah. You learn the most from failure.
I've gone to lots of different dance classes and I was dreadful. Like I went to one contact class. I never forget. I wanted to cry.
What is a contact class?
Contact classes is...
You dance and
you
just
kind of... You
keep
like
contact,
follow...
improvise. But like all the middle-aged hippie men were all like all over Suzanne, like hashtag me too. Like,
oh no, right.
I had to go in and save her. Like, get off my
friend. Just like, why are you on top of me? I'm like on the floor.
Like, I'm going to get this contact.
Never again, never again.
Oh,
it was terrifying.
Sounds terrifying, even if it wasn't creepy.
Yeah.
Contact class. Well, you kept touching your eyes when you were saying contact class. I was like, was it about like putting in your contacts?
Yeah.
I was like, what is that? It's like,
yeah.
That's
but you got a great story out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And a bit of it went in the show.
Oh, it did. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did get a little
bit of that.
Yeah, a bit of that, thanks.
A little bit of contact, thanks. And our final question is, who do you think that we should have on the podcast?
I'm going to have to say Panty Bliss from Riot. Yeah.
She sounds amazing. Is that speech that she made up on YouTube?
It is.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm gonna have to watch it.
A noble call
at the Abbey.
A noble call.
Yeah. But she's also, I mean, she's come up through the clubs and has done some amazing things, kind of in underground clubs, and now she is this national treasure. So her journey is
so cool.
And now she's in a variety circus show. So she's like, it's just constant evolving with Panty. So and he's such a nice person to have around and very generous with his time and amazing stories.
And Panty will talk and talk and talk and talk. So you have no problems.
The worst when you have a guest, you're like, I don't have another question to ask you.
Yeah.
And for the final three questions.
Well, thank you guys so much for the podcast. Welcome back to New York. We're so excited to see the show. It opens on Thursday and it's called Riot.
NYU
Skirball.
NYU Skirball.
Yeah.
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
So you only have three chances to see it?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Get your tickets.
Get your tickets.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be there Thursday.
And that was our interview with Peter, Suzanne, and Johnny, aka Up and Over It.
If you liked that episode or like our podcast, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, tweet us. email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com and make sure to subscribe on iTunes and rate us on iTunes. Hope you have a good weekend.
Have a good one.